It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And if he sounds a little remote, it's because he decided that it's a very logical thing to do for a financial planner to drive several hundred miles on very expensive gas to do a local radio show. Or wasn't
that's
that
right.
The, was that the reason you went?
You forgot the part about driving right into a storm.
Yeah, there's that. But we're from Florida. Those things are okay. Hey, what's the name of that thing, or has it been named?
It's a tropical storm. I don't know if it has a name or not.
But Adam's
if it does, it starts with A.
Yeah, exactly. Adam's down on Isla Mirada, which for those of you who have been there, is an awfully pretty place.
It really is. Even when it's really, really terrible weather, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, it won't be terrible weather always, because you know how it goes in the state of Florida. Once the storm goes through, you generally get the best period of weather you can possibly imagine. So it will pass. But meanwhile, connection's good. I was a little concerned when I was watching the weather and didn't know how communications were going to hold up, but apparently it just wasn't that bad. So here we are.
A little bit of wind and a little bit of rain, and just enough to not be able to go out and do anything fun.
Yeah, it's still sometimes, as they say, a bad day on vacation is better than a good day in the office, something like that.
That's right.
Anyway, to the regulars, welcome back. I've been informed the internet is still giving us problems, as far as I know, and I've got my research department working on that, and if it clears up, she will let me know that it's cleared up, and when that happens, I will let everybody else know it's cleared up. But right now, it's been very garbly from what we've seen. It has happened before, sometimes when somebody else is recording something in the building, and when that gets done, it goes away. So we don't know. We're working on it. We're well aware of it, and I apologize to anyone who's affected by it. But I tried the AM and FM on the way out here, and they're both crystal clear. So hopefully if you're around town, I would not probably suggest right now that if you're having trouble getting us, that you go turn your car on for an hour and listen at the price of gas today. But if you want to, who could blame you after all? Anyway, if you have just found the show and you're new to it for reasons that might be whatever, try to stick around for the whole hour. We'll be talking about a lot of things. Whatever we think is very interesting, you will hear. But if you find some other topic, financial, investing, whatever, of interest to you, then just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and you will be put on the radio and go directly to the head of the class, and we'll try to figure out what's up with your situation. Oh, man, another week. This market just cannot stand prosperity. You all know, if you're regular listeners at least, that we blew them out of the water last week. All three major indexes up over 6%. We were rolling along this past week also, shortened week that it was, and things were looking pretty good. I just got a message, by the way, from the research department that said it's better. Don't know if it's perfect yet, but the message is here. So if you're on the internet, there is hope. That's good. Anyway, going into, let's say, the close on Thursday, it was looking like we're going to put in another solid week and get two in a row. But, of course, all the naysayers had to just put in their sell orders for Friday, and the market fell just enough to not make the week positive. On the other hand, if you look at the two-week period, we're still up around the 5%. So the trend has improved. We'll see what happens from here. So, you want to take a shot at trying to figure out why this nonsense occurs, Adam?
Well, I don't know. I look at things within about a percent as more or less a flat week, and I think that's really what we saw. It was a shortened week because of the holiday on Monday, and we saw a couple of ho-hum days, and then we saw a really nice day on Thursday, as you mentioned. And I thought maybe we would end the week up. And in fact, we would have had Friday not been. It wasn't terrible. It just wasn't a great day either. But we would have been up if it had been even close to flat. So really just some, I don't even want to call it a bad week. It wasn't that bad considering we saw over a 6% gain last week. And there are a lot of signs out there that we might be at or near the bottom. Everything, if you watch the news, as always, we're a recession is imminent. We're headed towards doom and gloom. Everything's terrible. But the yield curve would disagree. Now, it's funny that people bring up the yield curve whenever we're close to an inversion or there is an inversion, but they never bring it up.
Never hear about it, do you, when it's normal?
No. But when it's perfectly normal, like it is right now, they won't talk about it. And they always say that the best sign of an upcoming recession is the yield curve inversion, but that is not what we're seeing right now. It's perfectly normal. It's very healthy, and it's really not pricing in the risk of any recession. There isn't a single inversion, and the forecast that it's giving for overnight rates is right around 3% next year, which is very similar to what the Fed is signaling it will do. So, in short, if the yield curve is telling us that if the Fed does what it's saying it will do, then there won't be a recession next year in the next 2 years. That's what it's saying right now. I think that's pretty good news that nobody's talking about.
It still could happen. There are things that could push us into one, but they would be artificial.
Of course, but not artificial, but things change constantly. It's a dynamic situation, but that is the situation as it sits today.
A lot of it's stupidity, and a lot of it's political, and on and on and on. But that's always out there.
So you kind of touched on this earlier, but coming out of Memorial Day weekend, the price of gas, according to AAA, is at $4.76. That's the highest on record.
Went up again today, $4.81 now.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I didn't have the latest numbers. I had yesterday's numbers, apparently.
You're just way behind then.
I guess. Oh, well, in this market, no doubt about it. Despite that, demand remains at high levels as the world is still reopening, and America and much of Europe have halted the imports of Russian oil. So that oil is still finding a home in places like India and China. And the fact is, demand for gas is going to fall with the higher prices. At $5 gas, people are going to make different decisions. I've been saying this for weeks, but the driving, the shipping, it's going to all change. You can't do the same things with $5 gas that you can with $3 gas. So I think that those predicting $150 to $200 oil are most likely going to be disappointed. In fact, I would not be surprised to see oil prices start to fall over the next few months. It may not be a dramatic fall, but any relief would be welcome at this point.
I was listening to a rather lengthy and scholarly dissertation this morning about the oil situation in the country, and we apparently have a humongous bottleneck at the refineries. So there is plenty of crude that could go there. But because of stupid politics and environmental stuff, all that, the refineries are not running at capacity that would keep the prices down. And then they have problems with the environmental people on the shipping of the product afterwards. So some of it's going to England and doesn't need to. So there are myriad problems. All right, now we got to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Fenway.
And we do have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can reach Ken at 904-636-7888. I've got a couple of them here today. I'm still kind of in a quandary what to use, but I think I'm going to go with the mortgage question. How much higher in dollars is the average American monthly mortgage payment today than it was right before COVID-19, which would be like 26 months ago, something to that, 26, 27 months ago. So in a number of dollars, how much has the average monthly mortgage payment increased since the beginning of COVID, or just before the beginning of COVID? All right, Adam has a more wrap-up on the market itself, and then we want to talk about the jobs numbers. There's an interesting pattern setting up there, too, I believe, which I don't know if it'll help you or not, but we'll talk about it. Take it away.
Yeah, that's it was an interesting week of economic data. It was a short week, but there was a ton of it, and it was actually pretty mixed. We saw about half misses and half beats, so right split down the middle. One interesting thing we saw was that the housing data, kind of in line with the trivia question, it showed massive price appreciation over last year, much to no one's surprise. But the Case-Shiller index was up 20.55% year over year, and the home purchase price index climbed 4.6% just since last quarter. But mortgage applications continue to trend lower, declining 2.3% week over week. And I think that's a trend we're going to see continue as well. The home price thing, I think that's going to, I don't think prices are going to start to go down, but will we see another year of over 20% increases? No, most likely not. The mortgage rates increasing is going to slow down that price appreciation. That combined with some of the materials that go into homes, they're going to start going backwards as well. In fact, we're already seeing it in the metals and in the wood prices coming down. Lumber prices are down 55% since mid-January. So I think that that pricing pressure on home building is going to go the other way. Another bit of economic data we saw this week, bullish sentiment rebounded solidly. It went from less than 20% all the way up to 32%. That was probably a reaction to the 6% gain last week and will likely reverse a little bit again next week. The number is still below the historical average of 38%, so it's not like the entire market turned bullish, but it was quite a big jump. Bear sentiment also dropped last week from about 51% all the way down to 37%. Moves in sentiment like that have generally been followed with positive but average forward market performance. But considering what kind of year it's been, if we could just get average market performance for the rest of the year, that would be a bit of good news. So hopefully that trend holds true and we do see some positive movement in the market going forward. Lastly, we saw some employment numbers, and they once again look pretty strong this week, with the exception of the ADP report. That one missed by a pretty wide margin. However, the JOLTS report still showed about 11.4 million unfilled jobs. Initial and continuing jobless claims beat their estimates, and the BLS jobs report showed 390,000 jobs created in May versus an estimate of 318,000, so that was a nice beat. Not a huge beat, but a decent beat. And the unemployment rate stayed steady. The participation rate ticked up by 0.1%, basically a rounding error. And average weekly hours worked and earnings came in on target. So all in all, the jobs report on Friday was pretty solid, I thought.
It was, except there's one spot in it that gave me concern. That's the small business number. ADP's small business number came out negative 91,000, and it seems that small business is having a tougher time than large business in the current economic conditions. And there's a lot of people out there blaming various things. There's still some people are still blaming COVID. I think that's a bit odd, personally, but I think I do have a bit of an understanding what's going on. We've got, as you said, we've got, 11.4 million job openings and under 600,000 people looking for jobs. That is a huge gap. But the thing to remember here is that we're still about 800,000 jobs short of where we were in February 2020 pre-COVID. And that is of major concern to me, that we can't even get the same number of people working yet, which means if you want to translate that into common sense English, the Biden administration has not yet created one job. All that's happening is that people are drifting back into the marketplace, and little by little, they're taking their old jobs back, or the older ones are being replaced by younger ones. but we're not even up to the same employment level. So I did a little digging, and I found one of the most interesting statistics that I've ever come across. With all of the money that was thrown at the country by Congress, and you know, you all know this was it started back under Trump, so I'm not pointing fingers on this one yet. The PPP and the on, the American Rescue Act and all the money that's been spent, there's like $3 trillion that got thrown at things that wouldn't have otherwise. And most people believe that at least some element of that was responsible for getting us into that V-shaped recovery that we actually took. But here's the problem. All that money's sitting out there. There's still $2.2 trillion left. So Americans have in their savings accounts now $2.2 trillion. And unfortunately, the attitude among many, many Americans is that I'm not out of money yet. I don't need to go back to work. So they're drawing this $2.2 trillion down at the rate of $41 billion a month. And that translates into about another 4.4 years before that money would be used up. So we might have some period of time yet where we don't actually see employment get back to where it was or plot ahead, which it should do, because so many people are just frankly taking it easy out there. And that concerns me, but I sure am grateful to those people who stood in the way of having that next $3-5 trillion package that they're still pushing for but aren't going to get. Thank you to all who blocked that. Imagine what that would do to both employment and to the rate of inflation right now. It would be devastating on the economy if we spent that much more money. So it,
oh my gosh,
it's interesting.
That would have been so awful. I can't even imagine how bad it would be right now if that had gone through.
What do you think the response would be right now if we asked everybody we saw, what's your number one and number two concerns now about life in America? I got a funny feeling that for a lot of people, maybe not in the right order, but they're so related, who cares? It would be inflation and the price of gas. And this is certainly related.
Absolutely. I was going to say the exact same thing. And they basically are the same thing. So yep. It's really it's one problem split into two categories.
Well, we were informed this week by the president that Americans feel better now about their economic security than any time since the Fed has been keeping records since 2013. Now, I heard that, and I picked myself off the floor when I was done laughing, and I looked into it, and I have the answer. And the answer
is... Okay, because I looked everywhere. I could not find what he was referring to. I did not find it.
No, I was up early and on the case because I wasn't going to let this slide. I know, you know, we deal with a lot of people, both personally and in business. Americans are not feeling the best they have felt since 2013. So come to find out, I'm going to back up first. I'm going to ask another question, a generic question for everybody. Has your attitude about the economy changed since October? Now, what hadn't happened in October yet? Oh, there would be the situation in Ukraine, the steeper acceleration of the price of gas, things like that. The inflation numbers were in the 4 and 5 range. Well, guess when the survey was taken? It was taken in October, November last year.
Go figure.
Yeah, you see where this is headed, don't you? We do have a call on the line. We don't have much time, but maybe we can get it set up. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, guys. Good morning, guys.
What's happening?
Love the program. Love the information. I'm out on the farm watching my chickens.
Good.
And my sheep run around. Hey, we've had to change our behavior.
Yes.
And I wanted to get into that with you guys.
Okay, we are about to take the break, and if we can put you on hold, can you wait through the break, and we'll pick it up? And
absolutely, because we've had to change our behavior, and you need to know about it. It's huge. It's going to have implications.
I want very much to know about it. It's a perfect phone call for a perfect time, so I'll put you on hold, and we'll talk to you in a very short time. This sounds like it's going to be right up our alley based on what has been talked about just in the last few minutes. So I'm very excited about that. And we'll pick it up right after. A few other things to do later on after that. But to me, the number one topic right now is how people are feeling and all the lies that are being told to us and about us. So this should be fun. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have Bob on the line. We are about to hear a story about how real people react to real-world changes in their economics. Far too many of today's pretend economists factor out human behavior when they make their stupid decisions and stupid rules. But you can't ever do that because humans aren't like that. Quick reminder, trivia question is out there. How many dollars higher is the average monthly mortgage payment today than it was just pre-COVID? Bob, back to the story.
Hey, how you doing, Steve and Adam?
Great.
I'm doing well.
What has happened to your life?
Well, what has happened to our life is, as you know, we're out on a farm. And when we go shopping, we either go to Jacksonville or Gainesville. Instead of us dashing to either place, we map out our trips, what we want, and what stores we have to go to, and make one trip rather than multiple trips during the week. That's a change of behavior, and that's due to gas prices.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. My wife went yesterday to Jacksonville, to Costco, to Trader Joe's, to Publix, dry cleaners, and one or two other places, Mayo Clinic, one or two other places, one trip.
Multitasking.
When she came home, she stopped in Lake City and filled up her tank, and it was like $50, okay? So you add that to the trip.
Right.
Whereas it used to be about $25 you could go,
yep.
Okay? So that's a double right there. As you know, we're on a farm, and I have 20 acres I have to mow. Guess what we're doing now? We were going to add cows. That's accelerated our purchase of a four-legged mower versus a off-road diesel mower.
You say goats are great.
Goats are great. We've got sheep, but we're going to add cows, maybe a couple goats, to cut down on the off-road diesel bill. And, you know, basically what this is doing is slowing the velocity of money because we're making fewer trips. Because of the high prices due to inflation, we're also watching our credit card bills. And as we have a set amount that we're doing now, whereas we didn't do that before, and we watch our credit card bill and our receipts, which we haven't had to do in the past, and when it comes close to the preset amount that we want to spend, we cut off the spending. We're cutting off the spending and then waiting for that credit card bill date to close and add it to the next cycle if we need something, unless it's an extreme emergency. So those are some major changes in behavior, and that's going to affect the economy.
And that comes out in the number known as real GDP. They can tell you what the GDP is, but if it's all inflated numbers, then it can look really good. But what's happening is that the actual level of business is going down, and that's exactly what you're describing.
Yep, and then also the farms around here. We've got neighbors that grow different things. We're exchanging goods and services versus going to the supermarket.
Why not?
I've got berries, I've got blackberries and blueberries. We're trading it for squash. I mean, that's an underground economy right there that's going to come into effect. It's not a huge chunk of the GDP, but you know, you've got a bunch of farmers, and that's what they're doing. So, anyhow, I thought I'd share that for you. Those are some major changes that we've made.
Well, everybody's doing something. And when you collectivize all of that, if I might aggregate the whole thing, what are the chances that we are or aren't in a recession right now? That's a really tough call, isn't it?
You know my thoughts on it. I'm thinking that every week that goes by, I'm thinking more and more that we already have been through or are in a recession.
I'm kind of very much with you on that. So
now we'll see in about a month whether or not that is accurate or even close to accurate, but I would not be the least bit surprised if the second quarter GDP came in slightly negative.
And that would be the first time in quite a long time that we satisfied the technical definition, I guess, of a negative growing GDP for two consecutive quarters.
Well, not that long. It was 2020 with COVID. I don't mean
the artificial ones, but even COVID, you know, that the initial shock of it was not nearly as bad. If this is happening despite things being better, then we have some serious problems. And the last thing we would need right now would be a tax increase. This, by the way, we've got another call in the wind, but I want to bring this up briefly. A lot of you know who Steve Forbes is. There are certain people in life that are so credible that when they talk, you listen. Steve Forbes has been one of those for me for an awful long time. And he has a new book out that's simply called Inflation. And I am about 40% through it, having just started it 2 or 3 days ago, because I can't put it down. And I know you say, oh, he reads a book about inflation and can't put it down. He really is a geek. Yes, I am, and I'm proud of it. But if you want to know the truth about what is going on, it's really good. I suggest it. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. I just popped on the radio. In fact, was just coming from Costco where I paid $4.45 a gallon for gas, and which is not too bad. I'm glad.
No,
that's
actually a pretty good price.
Yeah, it's a good price. It's the West Side location.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to follow up on the gentleman that called just previously, and there's two points I'd like to make. One really quick is I'm this thing with Joe Biden and signing this bill for $5 billion for college loan relief. I've already put a child through two out-of-state colleges, and now I'm paying for somebody's kids or some college kid that took on too much debt. So I'm not very happy about that. But my greater point, and you talk about Steve Forbes, is last night I found an old speech from Ronald Reagan on YouTube. It's called, it's from 1964, and I would implore your listeners, and especially the younger ones, to Google or to go on YouTube and listen to the whole speech. You can also download the transcript, but Ronald Reagan could give a speech like no other.
Oh, yeah, I would always do the verbal on that one just because I love hearing his voice so much.
Yeah, he was great. And the thing about it is he didn't use any teleprompter. It's old style. It's old school. It's about a 45-minute speech, I'm guessing, and he did it with note cards. And it's called A Time for Choosing. Actually, that wasn't the name of the speech at that time in 1964, but it kind of, you know, got that name, after years.
Would you say that
but
again?
It's called A Time for Choosing.
Okay.
And it's 1964, and he was giving that speech in support of Barry Goldwater.
Mm-hmm.
But you will be, if the hair on the back of your neck doesn't rise, then there's something wrong with you. And I don't mean you personally, but just people in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything he talked about in 1964 is what we're seeing now. And it has been going on since 1964. And he goes on to talk about, and if you know, your listeners don't know, he used to be a Democrat.
Right.
And then he switched to become a Republican. But then he talks about another individual, Al Smith, who was a Democrat in 1936 and switched to become a Republican.
There have been a lot of them over time.
Yeah, I listened to the speech last night, again this morning, and read the transcript. He talks about Social Security, which is an interesting subject in itself.
Yeah, and he was the first one in my lifetime that actually did something about it, too, when he got the extension done in 83, maybe, or right in there, where it actually added several years to the life of it. We need another one like that now if we're going to save it again. But he understood that a lot earlier than he was allowed to be president, unfortunately. But yeah, it is amazing to me how crystal clear the future is to some people and how others can't see anything through the fog of their own preconditioned or predetermined notions or whatever. But he was a peach. I miss him. All right, we're going to have to run. I really appreciate your call and a time for choosing. Everybody can look for that. All right, take care. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And it did occur to both of us that we didn't give the two callers so far a chance at the trivia question. So call back if you want to. Sorry about that. The clock kind of was not our friend right there. But anyway, how much higher in dollars is the average monthly mortgage payment today than it was just before COVID? All right, who wants some good news now? We've been talking a lot of gloom and doom, as is so easy to do these days. Now, this is stated in my little article here from Investment News as an affirmative, very positive thing, and I hope they're right. HHS will not readjust Medicare Part B premiums this year. Now, wouldn't that be nice? So next year, we all get a supposedly very hefty Social Security raise. But we all, I mean, you know, those of us of a certain age. And for once, a gigantic part of it is not going to be sucked up in increases in Medicare Part B, which will be deducted from it. That's the good news. And that's not all good news, because what they did to us last year, there is an Alzheimer's drug that's showing promise. And they decided in their infinite wisdom last year, the cost of this drug, by the way, was $56,000 a year last year to use it. So the HHS decided in their infinite wisdom that instead of charging the people who actually take the drug, they would just spread it over every Medicare B participant in the country. So instead of the normal increase, it rose from $148.50 to $170.10 per month this year. Well, the maker, it's called Aduhelm, or maybe I'm not pronouncing it right, but that's the drug. They reduced the price to an average of $26,200, or less than half of what it was before. So instead of getting a rebate or a reduction, they're just going to not raise the price, and we're still all paying for it. So I look at it as sort of mixed news, but just on its surface, not getting an increase when we are getting an increase in Social Security will help offset the ravages of inflation. So I thought everybody who's up in that range might feel a little bit better about that. We'll see how it works out. But it was announced as a positive. All right, now let's go to a negative. We can shift back and forth all day on these things. What if I told you, some of you will be surprised at this, and I bet others will absolutely not be surprised about this. One-third of Americans that have one thing in common live paycheck to paycheck. That one thing in common is that they earn at least $250,000 a year. Now, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people out there thinking, you know, I could do pretty well on $250,000 a year, might even increase my savings a little bit and have a nice little rainy day fund, that sort of thing. But when you think about it, a lot of these people live in places like California, New York, New Jersey, Chicago, where, first off, you're paying through the nose for taxes. Also, rents, housing prices, cars, now just the ravages of normal inflation. And in Orange County, for instance, this is a real good explanation. A top-tier home today costs $1.7 million. In February of 2020, this is the same time frame that I'm using on the trivia question because it's all related, that $1.7 million house was $1.2 million in February of 2020. Now, if you put the same amount down, then you're going to have a really whopping big payment. And that's before we consider the increases in other things like property taxes and just basic interest rates and so on. If you put $20,000 down on a $1.7 million home, at today's mortgage rates, it will cost you about $100,000 a year. That's 40% of the $250,000 used up just by living in something. And then you add the taxes, and then you add the gasoline and food and educational, you all know. It seems a little outrageous to even be reporting about this, but the more you think about it, the more you can understand. And it just makes you wonder how everybody else is getting by. I have a lot of sympathy for people who are scraping now more than ever, and I don't have the answer for it, except if we're patient enough to wait till November. Not sure how much good can do. And one of the things about November that's kind of concerning is that I haven't seen a lot of brilliance on the other side. Assuming that the right does take over the Houses of Congress, are they really smart enough to fix a lot of things? And are they really good enough to be able to override the veto pen up in the White House? I don't know. I just don't know. I'd like to know.
Well, I think the answer to that is pretty clearly a no, but I don't necessarily fault. It's more the system at that point. That there's not really much they can do when everything they will pass will get vetoed. So just stopping any new spending by the administration will be, which has already kind of happened, thanks to some moderate Democrats. They're really, it's basically like the Republicans have already been put in power in either the House or the Senate. It's essentially the same thing as we're seeing right now, the status quo. No new legislation, no new spending. That will definitely help inflation, but can they do anything else? Not really. So I don't know that it's a cure-all for anything, but it will ensure that there's no new government, inflationary government spending.
It's a giant step in the right direction, and it needs to be done. All right, all you Judge Judy fans out there, and I know there's a lot of you because how else do you get to be the highest paid person on television except to have a lot of fans? How many of you remember back in 1997 when she put out a book that I got a kick out of at the time and still do? And its title is Don't Pee on My Leg and Tell Me It's Raining. Now, I thought of that early this morning because I was listening to all the politics that are going around. Two of the things she said in the book, two of my favorite things, were first, if you want to eat, you have to work. The other one was, if you have children, you better support them. She had a knack for the practical. But don't you get the feeling that there's something warm running down your leg when you listen to all the speeches that are going on these days? And we're supposed to think that illegal border crossing should not be a criminal offense. We're supposed to think that people are feeling better about the economy than any time since 2013. We're supposed to think that $5 or $6 gas is necessary to make this exciting transformation to green energy. Okay. We're supposed to be complacent with the thought that job creation is the most robust in history when we can't even get back to the February 2020 level. And we're supposed to believe that the more money government spends, the more inflation will come down. Now, I've been studying economics for 50-something years, and I have never encountered a situation or anyone whose opinion I respected that would say the cure for inflation is government spending. And in fact, some of those people we're talking about, like Steve Forbes, another one, Steve Moore, for those of you who watch these things, you'll know those guys are pretty trustworthy. What's in a name? Yeah, I just threw that in. Anyway, I think if the Republicans want to go into this fall and have two mantras that people could believe right now, it would be very simple. The first would be Newt Gingrich's old line, drill, baby, drill. And the second one would be Trump's old line, build that wall. Now, if you want to see things change in this country and if you want to see an outpouring of support, I think those two things would be really wise. It was Steve Moore who recently said that the average mortgage payment is now $1,800 a month, 70% higher than before COVID. That means the change has been $741 more now than it was pre-COVID. It doesn't take a genius or an economist to factor that into the average person's lifestyle saying, we might actually be working toward a housing bubble and maybe prices will start to come down. If we can get some things under control, interest rates will fall back where they should be. The payments will become more affordable. Everybody will be better off. We'll see how that goes. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, same time. This is the Banway Financial Hour.